It's a joy to see all the shining manifestations of the One Self in all of the infinite forms and infinite unique facets of the Supreme Diamond that all of you are radiating. And greetings to all of those on the Love Stream attending this weekend intensive seminar that we are hoping will unify the planetary noosphere and bring about a much accelerated and optimal climax and denouement to this world drama through a return to our divine nature by so many beings that the entire collective morphogenetic field transforms effortlessly and peacefully and beautifully into God consciousness and brings about the birth of a new age, a new world, a new form of life at that level of divine consciousness that all of us in our hearts yearn for. So the title, as you see written on the board of this retreat, is "We Are Not," in parentheses, "Living in a Dying World." So I think first I should explain the title. The original title was simply "Living in a Dying World," and then I realized that, well, that was giving a false impression of what the teachings are about. But for some people, we are indeed living in a dying world. And that has to be taken into consideration when we have compassion for people's anxiety and terror and dread of the loss of freedoms and the compulsory injections, masking, social collapse, food shortages, all of those things that indeed can seem to some like we're living in a dying world. And then the question of how do we understand that that is not the case? Now, when I spent some time in India years ago and visited a number of ashrams, I discovered that wherever you would go in an ashram, you'd be classified as either a yogi or a bogey. Okay? A bogey is one who focuses their attention on jouissance, to use a French term from Lacanian psychoanalysis, which means the enjoyment of your suffering, but an addictive enjoyment to traits and tendencies and pursuits that bring about karmic backlash and dissatisfaction, disappointment, suffering of some sort or another, karma, in other words. So the average sentient being is a bogey. Those who renounce the suffering and the behaviors that cause suffering and focus on the transcendent reality that's beyond suffering are called yogis. Okay? And you can either be a practicing yogi or an accomplished yogi. You can have completed the yoga, meaning the union with the Supreme Self, and be free of suffering, or you can be on the path toward that, but not yet having attained it. Even though, once you do attain it, you realize you were always that. You had just somehow forgotten where is your access to your own realization of the Supreme Self, but it's never lost. So in India, they always use the metaphor of the woman who is wearing the necklace, but she forgot she's wearing it under her blouse, and she thinks she's lost it, and starts very frenziedly looking around for it and can't find it until someone says, well, wait a minute, you're still wearing it. And then she realizes she had never lost it at all. So that's the final, let's say, laughter that comes at the end once Jivan Mukti has been achieved. You realize you were never anything but that all along, because there is nothing you can be other than the self, because there is nothing other than the one self, meaning infinite consciousness. So, are we living in a world, or are we living in infinite consciousness? And if we are living in infinite consciousness, and the world is simply a projection coming from the source of that consciousness that produces a holographic simulation that they call Maya, illusion, in India. If that's all it is, but what it really is, consciousness, is eternal, undying, unborn, absolute, then indeed there is no dying world. There is only a particular form of a dramatic presentation of an opportunity for realization to reappear within the reflection of God consciousness that is produced by the illusion. So, you can either be a bogey in denial, or you can be a paranoid bogey. The denial bogey says, no, we're not living in a dying world. Everything is going to go back to normal. They're already reducing the mask mandates and all of that, thanks to the truckers, or some would say despite the truckers, or whatever. But everything will be fine. We'll muddle through. You see, everything is okay. The world is not in any trouble at all. And if you're in that denial, then yes, we're not in a dying world. We're just in a situation that happens all the time. Nothing unprecedented about this. And so I doubt that there's too many people of that category who are attending this particular gathering. But if there are, then don't come out of denial, because you'll just end up as a paranoid bogey if you do, and you'll start really worrying about what's happening and all the freedoms you're losing and all the tyranny and all of the difficulty of the global situation in the hands of Klaus Schwab and his minions and all of that, right? That everyone is beautifully attuned to as a James Bond film takes over the world, you see. It proves it's a dream. It can't be anything else, because the characters that are leading the roles today are clearly out of central casting. So nobody could possibly believe that this is an authentic world. It has to be a Hollywood production. Well, in any case, if you're a paranoid bogey, then that's a good reason for being at the retreat, because we're going to help you get out of paranoia, okay, and into metanoia. So you would then have to become a practicing yogi. So you're going to go from here to here, and then you're going to go from here to here, and then you're going to be
accomplished yogi. Okay?
So you have four options for your, let's say, your attitude in life in relation to this situation. We can either not be in a dying world because you're in denial of what's going on, or because you've transcended it and realized that it's an illusion. Or you can be either in paranoia, or you can be in the state of, let's say, attending upon God consciousness in a state of devotion, surrender, acceptance, and hopefully a state of grace, of bliss, of rapture that will come as a result of the practice. But you're in one of those four situations. So this is an important moment as we approach the apparent death of an apparent world and apparent age of history. In fact, perhaps the human story itself is coming to an end. This is what the transhumanists would want to bring about in one way, and what others would want to bring about in a more divine way. And some are terrified of simply annihilation and the planet becoming a radioactive ruin and all of that kind of a nihilistic result. So these are the different concerns of people who look at the world in these different ways. So I compiled a few ideas that I think will be worth considering in terms of why it is clear that for those who are either in the paranoid state or in the state of analyzing the state of Maya, the condition of the apparent world, why it is indeed that the world is dying. And I think there are seven main reasons for that, naturally. The first is that if we look around at the world, we are all experiencing the death of the principle of law. Okay? It was law, first in the form of dharma, spiritual law, the law of the Father, the law of God, that kept people honest, that kept cultures producing a goodness and fairness. It's law that is necessary to ensure freedom. You can have anarchy, but you can only have anarchy that works successfully if people have internalized the law, if they are following the golden rule, if they are nonviolent toward one another. Then indeed you don't need governmental superstructures to protect people. You don't need police. You don't need prisons. If everyone would follow the yogic yamas and niyamas, there would be no need for legal structures because the law would be embedded as culture itself. But once that got lost, then law had to become formalized. But the more it was formalized, the more then that the ego was able to use its cleverness to corrupt the letter of the law and make the fine print serve those who were in favor of inequality and oppression, etc. So the principle of law that is dependent upon the relationship of the human to the divine, of man to God, because the source of law, the divine right, not only of kings, but of powers of legitimate authority in whatever form they emerge, have to come from beings who have the wisdom, the purity of heart, the generosity of spirit that has come as a result of their yoga, of their renouncing the greed, the attachment, the favoritism, cronyism, all of the attributes of the ego that are the cause of the downfall and the loss of coherence of modern culture. So law, as a principle of our being, has to return to us, because once you get the corruption of law, it spreads through every faculty and institution of society, and it turns into its evil twin, its opposite. So you now have the medical industry that is no longer healing, but is actually killing people. You have the media that's supposed to spread information and truth that's spreading lies and disinformation. And you have religions that are producing heresies and dependence on matter rather than on spirit for the healing of the human being. And you have, in every institution, you have a corruption and a reversal of its original intention that is now serving greed and the powers that can intimidate by threatening violence, etc. And you have people collapsing, caving in to the demands to act in ways that are clearly evil, or at least without concern for the ultimate consequences of their actions, and their concern is only their own immediate gain or survival. So once you have the fish, you know, rots from the head down, so the society, once the government becomes lawless, which is the situation today, the institutions that should be protecting the law are violating it. They have become the lawless engineers of social collapse and destruction. And once that happens, then all egos mimetically feel the right to become lawless. If the government is lawless, if the president is lawless, the prime minister, and they're all violating the very mandates that they're telling everyone to follow, and this is public information even, they're flaunting their own recognition that this is all a joke. And so then it becomes the same for every ego then. And there is no legitimacy, no higher authority, and everyone is in it for themselves, and every ego feels it has a right to steal, to kill, to lie, to break all the Ten Commandments or even more, and not to care about their fellow. There's no more, am I my brother's keeper? That question is thrown out. And yet there's a herd mentality that will follow, but out of fear of intimidation, not out of following the law. So we have the production of lawlessness en masse, and this makes it, of course, very difficult to reestablish a bedrock upon which a new culture can be formed. The trust between human beings has been deliberately cut, and social distancing and masking and all of that has contributed to that loss of connection, loss of trust, loss of belief, loss of faith in people's in fellow humanity. So this is a vibrational frequency now that is at large in the culture, and that we all have to deal with as one of the aspects of living in a dying world. Secondly, there is the fact that everyone is coming to grips with now that a social collapse, a global social collapse of the entire international, not just the national systems, is being engineered deliberately. And largely because the financial system was bankrupt, and in order to preemptively get ahead of that, they have engineered this. It's not an accident. It's not a result of simply bad weather. Even the weather is now controlled and deliberately distorted by technological means. So we have a situation where we are dealing with an intentionality of destruction that is being imposed. And therefore, the forces that are supposed to be trying to recuperate normality, as it was anti-pandemic, are actually working toward a different outcome. So this has already resulted largely in the destruction of the middle classes, of most small businesses, and of most, let's say, neighborhood cultures, grassroots connectivity, and the collapse is moving into every level of our lives, including destroying the bonds, the social bonds between among families, between members of a couple, and generational connectivity, gender connectivity, even identity being now thrown into chaos. So there are no longer any master signifiers that hold the culture together, and there is a loss of that kind of cohesion. People being prevented from going to churches and synagogues allegedly because of the pandemic to protect them is also to cause a disconnect from those gatherings that would inspire and uplift the spirits of people. So there's a deliberate, depressive intention to create more anxiety, more despair, more hopelessness. And we're all dealing with that kind of a social vibration as well. Thirdly is the question of censorship. We all know about it. And we know how people are being kicked off of major platforms for quote-unquote unacceptable opinions, even if they are scientifically based, even if they are something that have been stressed by the mainstream at another time, but if they're not the current party line, they're out of bounds. And this goes along with a dumbed-down educational system that people have suffered with for a long time. But we have destroyed, literally, the human species' ability to think and the feeling of the safety in thinking independently. You are punished for it. You are ridiculed. You are smeared. You are attacked. You are marginalized. You can be eliminated. And often with extreme prejudice. So the capacity for critical independent thinking is being lost. You're being told what you must think. And this is nothing other than the turning of the world into a cult. It's very important that we understand this. Sat Yoga, which is often smeared as being a cult, is actually an anti-cult. The world is the cult in which you're no longer allowed to think. You're no longer allowed to question authority. You're no longer allowed to have ideas that are not acceptable to the mainstream. But once we lose our ability to think, our entire consciousness crumbles. It falls away. We fall into sleep. We lose what is truly best in us, truly alive in us. Our humanity is being destroyed by the censorship that is increasing and causing a disconnect in the conversations that we have together that enable us to have a meeting of the minds, to have a sense of unity, of understanding of what is real, what is true, what is valid. All of that is being destroyed by these propagandist disinformation methods that are now, of course, very high-tech and difficult to overcome. And, of course, lately that has led to the idea that people are suffering from mass psychosis, which in fact is the result of that loss of consciousness. So then the next point is that not only is social collapse being intended, but clearly global depopulation and mass murder, genocide, all of that is going on and, again, can't be spoken about. And so we are dealing with a situation where it's too unbearable, too unthinkable to imagine that what is going on is actually going on. And because of that, denial is the easiest way to deal with it. It couldn't be that they're doing what they're doing. And therefore, it must not be. And so it produces more of an ostrich defense of putting one's head under the sand and pretending it's not happening. And everyone is liable to go into that when they face the enormity of what is happening and how quickly it's happening and how collectively, massively, it is already underway and how far it's already gone and where it may lead. Most people don't want to think about it. And that combined with the geo-engineered destruction of the environment, the chemtrails, the 5G, all of that, I'm not going to belabor the details. You all probably know it better than I do. The deliberate cutting of food supply chains and food production and the unlimited use of bioweapons, et cetera, et cetera. And now, of course, the next point is that because of the pushback that we are seeing, by not only the truckers, but by many others, the whole population is beginning to wake up. And this is causing the elite to play another card, which is a global thermonuclear war. So if you can't kill them one way, you do it another way. And so the international tensions are being ratcheted up every day. We can see that. And it's not unlikely to be a result if the pushback becomes so strong that it begins to overthrow the current elite. So we have a situation that is, let's say, in the foreground, but in the background we also have two other phenomena that we have to take into consideration. One of them is that even before the pandemic, we were in the midst of a massive die-off of species. The entire web of life was already being lost. The bee colonies being decimated, the oceans nearly dead of fish and other species of marine life, the destruction of the frogs, all the amphibians that are so necessary to the web of life, and other insects besides the bees, the butterflies are dying. We're seeing a massive die-off of birds now. We're seeing it exponentially increasing. Life itself seems to be coming to an end. Nature seems to have lost the ability to sustain herself because of the malfeasance of human behavior in the production of waste in the ocean, plastics, non-biodegradables, pesticides, and radiation from Fukushima and other places. Massive, more and more things that I could mention that have already resulted in a destruction of the web of life that is, from the perspective of many scientists, is already past the point of no return. So we do have to recognize that. And then in addition, we see an increasing amount of seismic activity, volcanic activity, even solar flares and coronal mass ejections and asteroids coming toward the Earth. We see a massive increase of cosmic threats suddenly that we didn't experience before. This, I think, also is no accident, and it points to, again, that this is a simulation and that all of this is directing us to the recognition that there is a higher will, not just a malign, evil group of predators who are behind this, but something far more cosmic is at work. This takes us back to the ancient Gnostics who believed in the archons and in the demiurgos and in Lucifer, the fallen angel, and in other non-human divine forces that had fallen that would create this kind of a situation at the end of days. So we see the fulfillment of all of those ancient mythological systems. And it's present in all of them, in Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism. They're all pointing to an end of Kali Yuga, the twilight of the gods, Ragnarok, all of that. It's in the consciousness now, I think, of the general public that all of these prophecies are coming to pass. The mark of the beast is being injected, and the various statements in different biblical passages you can see in many videos online that are emphasizing the fact that what is happening is something that has been embedded in the archetype of human culture, in the idea of creation, fall, and redemption, and that we are reaching the climax of this a theodrama that we are all playing parts in. So to understand that is, in a sense, also to give more dignity to what is going on, to giving it not only a cosmic but a truly godly dimension, that what we are encountering is the need on a personal as well as a collective basis to return to God, to return to that goodness and that connection to egoless consciousness that we have lost by falling into identification with matter and becoming consumers and losing our understanding of the need to sustain the Dharma, the law of God, through time, and having failed to sustain our obligation as stewards of nature, of the earth, of goodness, of peace, of love, brotherly love, sisterly love, and agapic love, love of God that would bring about an ability, a strength, a moral strength to renounce the greed that modern culture is based on, that all capitalism is based on, that has been lost and has to be returned to, rediscovered and reclaimed, and quickly, if we are to change the trajectory of our destiny. So that's the main point, I think, about why it is clear that just from the perspective of the phenomenal plane, we are indeed living in a dying world. But what has died is the human spirit. We have died to our spirit and fallen into a level of consciousness identified with the body. And only by returning to spirit, by saying we have died from it, we have lost access to it. Spirit, of course, doesn't die. But we have to return from that level of consciousness that is trapped in chronos time, in the linear unfoldment of the temporal drama, to that level of consciousness in which all time and space is present. And we have transcended the limited, and we can bring the grace of God consciousness to bear within the world as manifestations of that one consciousness. So that, to me, is the escape valve and the opportunity we have at a spiritual level to manifest a different destiny than the one that is now seemingly hurtling out of control into destruction. And if we can accomplish that through our own elevation, our own return to the true nature of our being, then we will have succeeded in fulfilling perhaps the highest destiny that we are possibly able to fulfill in our relationship to the real. And it's this return to what is the real, from the unreal, from the world of time and space, that is the purpose of Sat Yoga. So I hope all of that makes sense to you and is in a way motivating, if you believe you're living in a dying world, to get out of it through the realization that there is a power of consciousness that is not limited by what you might think of as natural law or cause and effect. That because the world is a dream, it is not simply based on random or on physics principles. It's based on a consciousness that is governed by goodness, by love, by beauty, by the truth of our nature as manifestations of that divinity, then we have a possibility of gaining the power to change our future to become a kingdom of heaven again. So that's the focus that, for me at least, the remainder of this seminar will be about. How do we do that? What are the obstacles? How do we overcome them rapidly and attain instant liberation from the illusion, the bondages we might think we are in, the baggage our ego is carrying that keep us in lower states, and return to the freedom of infinite consciousness that is our birthright as unborn beings of infinite eternal consciousness. So I'm going to stop there and see if there are any questions, comments, critiques, anyone wants to argue or anyone wants to present a different alternative paradigm, whatever. The floor is open. And if there are people online, I'd like to ask one question, though, before this, for people on the love stream as well as here, which is this. If you accept the basic argument that I have presented, that we are living in a dying world as a dream field, but we have the ability to transcend, to become liberated in life, jivan muktas, we have that ability. If you accept that, how many of you are seriously working to become jivan muktas right now? How many of you are seriously making that your highest priority? Is there anyone in that category? Okay. Good. And I'd like to find out if there are online people in that category, because if you're not really seriously working on it already, then it's going to be very difficult as time goes on and this world situation becomes more morbid and filled with cataclysmic events, massive earthquakes that will destroy major cities and wars and all of the other things we've talked about. The ability to have the luxury to sit and meditate as we have here now may disappear for many people. And so now is the moment to take advantage of this calm before the storm, relative calm for many, because once the storm hits, you'll want to already be in that state that's beyond Maya. So a word to the wise. Okay, floor is open. Okay, Purusha.
Thank you, Shunya. We've got a lot of affirmative responses to your questions. Okay. I can't count them all right now. Looks like there's probably about 20 or 30.
Wonderful.
Okay, and as for our online audience, welcome everyone who's joining us tonight for this retreat. We're welcoming people from the U.S., Northern Ireland, India, Austria, the Netherlands, Sweden, Norway, Australia, Taiwan, New Zealand, Ireland, Canada, Belgium, Jordan, England, Mexico, Brazil, Switzerland, Israel, Hong Kong, and Scotland, and probably many more. And we're very happy to have you all with us tonight. Our first question comes from Sarah. And Sarah says, I've been on my spiritual search since I was a teenager, but for the past 12 years or so, I've been focusing on that path as much as possible. I'm married and I'm bringing up children. When possible, I go to ashrams and try my best to keep my yoga practice and take part in retreats. However, I don't know how I can combine my life in Maya, especially my family life, and at the same time dedicate my life to self-realization, a life in community, and prepare for the end of Kali Yuga. I feel trapped in many ways, but I'm trying to convince my husband that we need to find another way of life. Could you offer any advice?
Yes. No matter what your living situation, there are no obstacles to transcending Maya because it's entirely internal. So nothing external, regardless of those conditions, regardless of your sense of obligations or your feeling of stuckness in a given situation, none of that affects your ability to achieve Jivan Mukti. Liberation from the illusion of the ego is possible for everyone, no matter where you are. You can be in prison, your body can be starving, you can be sick, you can be dying of the injection, you can be dying of COVID if you believe in it. If you believe in it, you could be. And because anything you believe in, you can make a reality. And if no matter what, though, the situation is, if you let go of all beliefs, if you let go of all the sense of identification of consciousness with matter and with mind and with thoughts, if you disidentify from both of those objects, physical objects, mental objects, and turn it toward the absolute subjectivity and beyond subjectivity, the absolute source of consciousness itself within you, you can be free of all suffering, of all pain. And because you're not the body, it will no longer matter what happens, but magically what happens will change. It will not change because of your decisions or your actions, because you will no longer exist as an actor or a doer. You will realize that the one who does everything is the infinite consciousness. And it's that freedom from the belief that it all depends on you and you have to decide and change and do things to bring about a better situation or a better a person or in some way that you have to accomplish anything before you achieve the realization of what you really are. All of that is false. And so liberation is achievable instantly, and magically then that infinite consciousness that you are can produce changes in the apparent external world situation that will enable a different outcome on that level as well. But it must not matter, and you must reach that point where you are beyond the illusion of life and death. And if you are in that state, your vibrational frequency will emanate to everyone in your family. Your husband will magically change his mind and want to also achieve liberation and find a different way to live, etc. Everything will change, but it won't change because of your intention. It will change because of your surrender to the will of God, whose will and goodness will bring about a state of grace in the entire field of energy that you are emanating from that place of infinite love. Okay, so I hope that is useful to you. Is there anyone in the room with a question or comment? No. Okay, then.
Okay, a question from Tanya. Would you say that all of these atrocities are actually ultimately helping people in waking up, and that would make them part of the divine plan too, in a way?
Yes, I agree with that, absolutely. I don't think we would be waking up. I don't think a lot of people would be in this ashram now if it weren't for that situation. And I think there wouldn't be the people online listening and wanting to achieve liberation except for the emergency nature of what we're all going through. So unfortunately, this is what the human spirit needed, to be prodded with such a terrifying prospect of planetary death that nothing short of that would bring them to want to awaken and give up their jouissance to return to God consciousness. So it's happening as it must, and therefore it's all good, it's all perfect, and we should consider everything that's happening a blessing. Anyone here? Okay, then.
Okay, a question from Branka. Any tips on how to guide teens through this time? It's quite overwhelming for them to see that the world they know is collapsing.
Yeah, I think it's overwhelming for everyone. And I actually think teens may have a more vibrant appreciation, just as in the 60s, the counterculture was mostly inspired and motivated by people in their teens. And I think people in that level of consciousness, once they understand that this is the moment when they can rise to their divine nature and function not simply at the larval level of consciousness, but the butterfly level, the angelic level, the risen consciousness, that the fulfillment of all of those stale religious promises now can be a reality, that is a fact that can be experienced, imperienced, if you prefer, by meditating and breaking free of the ego and returning to the light and feeling the joy of the love that one feels in one's heart when it's free of all of the egoic beliefs that have caused it to wither, to become defensive, to become, contracted into a very clogged form of deadened consciousness, that this is a moment where you have nothing to lose, so you might as well come fully alive. And I think there are a lot of young people who are actually in a very inspired and wild, in a good way, state of attaining freedom from having to go to school and get a job, you know, because there aren't any. And so you're free to decide what do you want without having to follow any rules or parental injunctions, because your parents don't know what's going on. They're probably in denial. And if they're not, they're terrified. And so you have the freedom to go beyond them and become their teachers and guides and really gain absolute consciousness and become spiritual leaders. So I think those who have the fresh blood of young bodies will be the leaders in this period in which the waking up becomes massive and global. No one else here? Okay.
Okay, perfect. A question from Narayan. Is now a time to retreat and meditate, or shall we meet our challenges fearlessly and ferociously?
Both. It's not an either or. You have to meditate in order to reach fearlessness. But once you have achieved fearlessness, then yeah, be ferocious. But ferocious in a nonviolent way. Ferociously able to speak the truth and able to leave the known for the unknown, to take risks, to take a vision quest, to move into levels of reality that have no maps, and to fulfill the highest possibilities of your creative imagination. So this is the time to go for it. But you will achieve that through meditating on your own supreme self, not on the lower levels of yourself, but the highest level of selfhood that is potential within you. That's what you want to awaken and activate. And then that power moves through you in extraordinary ways and produces miracles. No one here has any comment or question, really? You're all Jivan Muktas then, I'm sure. Okay. If there's anyone else, go ahead.
Oh, yes. Okay, next question from Patricia. I feel embarrassed to recognize my ego lowliness in this critical time of humanity. I understand this truth, but I keep falling back into bad habits. Is meditating the answer?
Let's put it this way. You want to introspect on why you are pursuing habits that produce suffering and that keep you in a lower state of consciousness. There's always some thought behind it, and the thought is based on some emotional charge, some fear of letting go of an attachment or of a belief system that keeps you grounded and that keeps you addicted to those behavior patterns. If you let them go, you'll be groundless. You'll be in the unknown. You will have to discover who you are all over again. You'll have to have beginner's mind, as the Zen masters say. You'll have to move into immediacy and presence because you won't be able to depend on the past and the old patterns of past thinking. You'll have to download new information from the Akashic Records and the Noosphere. You'll have to live in an entirely different way that has no rules and no superstructure. You'll have to become acclimated to freedom. So you have to ask yourself, what is it that keeps you from wanting freedom? And why are you choosing to enslave yourself to a lesser level of consciousness than you're capable of? And then break free from it with a ferocious roar of choice, of freedom, and of liberation, and then never go back into the cage of the ego. Okay, here's one. I'm going to put the mic. Anuradha.
Namaste, Shunyamurti. This was such a beautiful teaching. Thank you. My question, I almost wasn't going to ask it until this last person asked this, so it's along the same lines. And it's about what can you say to one who is trying to awaken their lost heart and trying to access it? Because from that place of fear, things have to be drawn back in through the viveka of the heart. But there is just so much. She's lost that heart. She's lost access to it. So how can this being awaken it to keep upright, keep going up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question. It's actually a fairly universal question because every ego is a defense against being in the heart. Every ego is a defense against love, against being vulnerable, against being fooled by toxic forms of love or love, apparent love that is really a desire to exploit or possess or to abuse, that kind of thing, that everyone has gone through, those kinds of traumas. So the ego is a defensive system to make sure that never again will I be traumatized, I won't be fooled, right? I won't be vulnerable. So once you recognize that it's not the love of another that you're looking for, it's not that you want to find a human ego that will be your rescuer. It's that you want to realize the love that is the presence of God within your heart, that will empower you, that will inspire, that will enable you to have access to your infinite intelligence, not just your love, but the wisdom and the power to manifest consciousness at such a high level that you're able to understand everything and you're able to master all the lower levels of consciousness so that they're no longer producing resistance or threat or paranoia, but you see the infinite beauty of all that is. You see the oneness pervading the multiplicity. And so as soon as you recognize that this defended mental apparatus of the ego is not who you already are able to leap into soul consciousness. You don't have to deconstruct the whole ego and take down all of its bars and locks and all of that. You leap into the soul in which love is your nature always. It's never lost. And you also have a yearning for the wisdom and the power of God and the grace of God and the ability to receive it. And so your soul then frees you from the ego chatter that would bring on fear and trepidation to be free. And you silence it and you sacrifice it in order to become one with God. So jump into soul consciousness. It's a higher vehicle, and you're already there. If you're asking these questions, it means you understand that the soul is a higher nature that is available to you, and then you can leap into it without any obstacle that can prevent it, and then the ego can be eliminated. Okay?
Yeah, it's either the soul. It just doesn't work.
No, so that's right. You have to move into soul consciousness, and then from the soul, it's very easy to move into the pure spirit and feel the power of God without limitation. So that's the intermediate step that you must take.
Can one jump into soul, as you said? I know it's not literally like that, but then slip into ego again, because
yes, it can happen if you do not establish your consciousness that this is your default position. This is the level you live at. You've chosen to live in freedom and in the light and in love, and you will not go back to a conjected, fearful, angry state. You're going to stay in that. And you will have the power to overrule your ego. And then it will try to get you back. The ego will tenaciously attempt to pull you back down. But you'll be at the Viveka point, as you said. You'll see the ego's games. You won't fall for it. And the ego will get exhausted and extinguished simply by your not breathing life into it anymore and being done with it. And then the power of God will eliminate it from your space, and you'll be in the inconceivable presence that transcends thought. Okay?
It seemed like there was that will, and then I just didn't have it anymore. Like, I haven't had, but I think I've just allowed the demons to take over.
That's
so
right.
Just keep practicing. That's until right. The will is unbroken.
The war must go on until you have conquered completely. But never give up, and the grace of God is with you. So always be in a state of devotion and surrender and of a complete openness to receiving the power of God, and that Shakti will come to you. The goddess will come and fill your form with light and love and joy, and the ego's fears will be clearly understood as delusions, and you'll never go back.
Thank you, Shunyamurti. Namaste.
No one else here has any comment? Okay, then.
Okay, a question from Lucas. Is physical love in its pure form not a manifestation of the divine creative force? Is God not love itself? How does a young disciple achieve the highest level of consciousness without the earthly experience of pure physical love? And how can he create this natural force if he has never known or experienced it?
Well, it's in you. It's inherent. And there is nothing physical. You see, ultimately, love itself is not physical. Love is a feeling state. Love comes from the spirit. Love is the power of God. God is not physical. Love may be expressed physically. It may be expressed in many ways. The expression of love is not important. What's important is the source of love, and the source of love is God consciousness. How that will then become expressed, leave to the will of God, because God's intelligence and God's power of discernment will make that love an active force for good. And in whatever way that it manifests, it will bring about an outcome in which love is multiplied and disseminated in the world, so that that everyone will be able eventually to realize that we are all beloved of God and lovers of God, and we are nothing but the power of love itself in action. So yes, stay true to love and you'll be guided. Okay, Nicolette.
Namaste, Shanyamurti, thank you. It's funny, I candidly will admit I feel like I felt myself go through these three stages. I was in complete denial. And then realized everything was happening and was terrified and got into this like state of depression. And then someone, told me, like, get out of the body. Like, don't get dragged down with everything that's trying to suppress you. Like, go up. Mm-hmm. And when I kind of closed my eyes and I realized that this is just completely temporary and this is just an illusion, almost so much lightness like kind of came through. And I guess the most impactful thing you've said for me tonight was this essence of moral strength, which I think Anuradha touched on as well. It's this constant like perseverance and devotion to like detaching from everything the ego is trying to like suck and like bring us down. And this last question you asked the Sangha, like, how seriously am I committed to liberating myself from Maya? Like, it really, I didn't raise my hand, and I was shocked, I think. Like, if I were to raise my hand, I think I would be dishonest. And now it's like it was a good mirror as to what are my values right now and what's my priority. So this devotion, surrender, and allow the goddess to come in, it almost... the whole, the matter that we think matters doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So it's more of a comment than a question, but just wanted to say thank you.
No, it's a beautiful comment and a beautiful, use of the information to bring yourself to a higher level. And that the fact that you actually reflected deeply on that question, which I hoped people would do, and that it accomplished a paradigm shift in a way, and a transvaluation, a sense of looking at your values again from a higher place where you could reconsider them, not from the ego's habitual patterns of thought, but from a place of potentiality and of recognition of what is happening on the phenomenal plane and what is possible for you to do to reach liberation from all the suffering, and that you can do it, and that you can choose to be liberated now, I think is an extraordinary realization that you have had. I hope you keep it and let it brew and bring you to that moral strength that becomes a spiritual realization. And it can be done much more easily than your ego would probably tell you. You can believe, and so you need to understand that none of the ego's thoughts are true, and the ego doesn't know reality, and its job from its perspective is to hold you down, and it thinks it's keeping you safe and serving you, but it's actually keeping you small and disconnected from your real self. So the more that you recognize that and choose freedom, the more power, moral strength, and spiritual power that's even beyond moral strength will be given to you. So I hope you keep going on the vertical path. Thank you. Okay, Yogi Raj.
Thank you, Shunya. Great overview of the of the reality of what we're facing right now. I really appreciate it. It was actually your first point about the death of the principle of law that I find myself reflecting on, because there's kind of two paths. If all of these laws are illegitimate, we might as well go into debt, and like the ego just wants to think of all the ways that it can take advantage actually of the situation of all of these laws being illegitimate. But actually what's more interesting is I wonder if that's the realm of the miraculous, where if you step forward with that confidence of living, let's say, in God's law or the divine law, and you meet these illegitimate laws, surely God has to come into this realm, and extraordinary things happen. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious how much that can be a practice to mm-hmm. almost like provoke that kind of situation where miracles happen.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what. Mm-hmm. Is being provoked, and it's God who's doing the provoking. So you might think that's an idea you are having, but it's an idea you're being given. In you are being provoked in order to become a provocateur of divine, miraculous intervention. And yes, we do have that power, but it can only be activated once we have been purified of ego, so we don't use the power to take advantage because of greed or some other lower base intention, but the intention of service of God and bringing about the welfare of all. So if that is our intention, to fulfill the will of God, then we will be given that power. But it will happen in the form of synchronicities. It won't happen in the way of I'm going to put a magic spell on people, or I'm going to do the art of attraction, right? The law of attraction, that kind of thing. No, it's going to be you attract God consciousness to yourself. You become unified with that infinite field of egoless presence, and that creates a different context in which miracles will pop into manifest form, but not because of any individual intention, but that the whole field has been activated and awakened to the cosmic consciousness in which we are all one. Not that there are separate beings acting and others being acted on, but that the entirety is unified in bringing this miracle into form.
I imagine it's like a fairly spectacular life, let's say, at the end of this cycle of time, to witness like the revelation of God, and almost proof of God, right, just through living in truth and yes. and living a life of integrity. So it's a interesting idea that God's exploring.
Indeed, I hope you do explore it and discover its absolute validity. And all of the sages who have lived even in times before this ending of Kali Yuga have experienced it and talked about it, and miracle stories have been written about them, hagiographies, but which are true stories, that miracles happened all around Sri Ramana and Anandamayi Ma and all of them. They had no intention, but but they kept on happening because of the purity of their heart and the beauty and the peace that they radiated. So it is that will bring about the miraculous. And yes, it will become more and more extreme, because the world is made in balance. So the darker things get, the more light also comes in to balance the darkness. The more miraculous compensates the more demonic, until the absolute truth completely turns the demonic itself into simply an attribute of God consciousness, because one sees that all of this was only in order to bring everyone back into the unity of that one self. So everything is beautiful and perfect. And once you are in that state, then miracles are happening constantly.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is that Vajra wanting to ask something? Yes? Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Shunya. Thank you for presenting this all with such kind of clarity and hope and upliftment, even though we're talking about the state of the world. I was curious when you were speaking about censorship and how the world is a cult now in which no one is allowed to think anymore, and how once that happens, consciousness kind of falls asleep. And since we're always speaking about silencing the mind, I guess I was curious about what would be the accurate way to think in this moment.
Okay. It's a good question because, you know, from the ego's perspective, I think one of the main resistances from the level of the ego to achieving liberation is that the ego feels it would be deprived of its mental activity, right? To silence the mind means, oh, then I just become a blob. I can't think. I can't differentiate. I can't choose. I can't figure anything out if I can't think, right? It's completely the opposite of that. It's reaching a higher level of intelligence that doesn't depend upon language or two-valued logic, which is embedded in language. So everything is true or false, good or bad, right or wrong, right? The reality is different than that. And there's an entire spectrum of possibilities that are not limited by some superego telling you, no, that's bad, or some other force telling you it's impossible because it violates this or that law of causality, whatever. Once you reach that higher level where the ego mind is silenced, the pure intelligence of God that cannot be put into linguistic form or even mathematical form becomes available to you. It can then be translated into mathematics or language or any other form, including the form of the miraculous manifestation. But it is, you realize that the universe itself is a thought in the mind of God. We are in the mind right now. All of us are manifestations of God's thoughts. And once we understand that and we get to the source, to the thinker of the thought that is the cosmos, that thinker, then the capacity to contain thoughts of that immensity is so extraordinary that the effect that you can have upon the phenomenal plane is extraordinary and without limits. But one has to first enter the emptiness and the unknown and the complete loss of that instrument of language in order to access the Word of God, the true Logos, the true Tao that gives that power back in an infinitely expanded form of understanding and wisdom and capacity to grasp what is happening, not only in the phenomenal plane, but because all of time and space and all of potentiality of the multiverse is present in that consciousness. There are capacities that are unimaginable to the mind that is stuck in this particular corner of this particular cosmos. And that infinite capacity of intelligence is available if we let go of our identification with the petty creature and realize we are one with the Creator.
So the ego thinking has to be let go of that function, and in the silence is when the higher thoughts arise.
Not only does the ego's thoughts have to be eliminated, but the ego itself because it's the I thought at the root of the ego that limits your capacity to contain higher intelligence. It won't be conceivable to you. It won't be digestible or translatable if you're in ego consciousness. The thought will be too large. It will be too great that you might gasp and go, ah, but you won't be able to bring it down into the earth plane. So there has to be a complete letting go and an expansion beyond the limits of the identity that's rooted in the body and become that pure consciousness that is coextensive with the cosmos itself and with the mind of God that pervades and transcends the cosmos.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay, a question from one of our pragyanis, Ami, who says, can Shunya comment on the meaning of the I in the name of God, I am, since realizing the self means dropping the identification with the I?
Yes. That I am is not the I thought. Okay, so it's very important to recognize we have many different levels of I. The ego itself is a collection of an assortment of different I's. Not only do we have the conscious ego mind that you might identify with at any moment, but it has a persona and many sub-personalities, or some have multiple personalities. Each one has its own I. There are subconscious fantasies. Each one has its own I. The real agency that controls the ego is not the conscious mind, you know, but the sensor. The sensor determines. It's the sensor's I. That's an I thought that is below the threshold of our consciousness that actually determines what defenses you have, what information will go in, what will be remembered, what will be forgotten, what will be really understood, and what will be distorted. There's an agency that is below the threshold of consciousness that actually has to be eliminated as a focal I thought that is actually the controlling agency of the ego apparatus as a whole. But then we have a higher level of vehicle of I, which we call the soul. And then beyond that is the I, or I am, or aham aham in the Sanskrit, of God's great I am. And that is that level of consciousness that is transcosmic. So that I is a totally different I than the I that's either identified with the body or with the soul that has had past lives and future lives, but is still one thread in the tapestry of time and of space. But the entire tapestry and the one who weaves the tapestry, it's that I that is our original and ultimate nature to which we must return. And we can't do that except by transcending thought and language to pure intelligence and presence that cannot be symbolized, because its immensity is so infinite that it cannot be defined. You see, to define is to take you from the infinite. And so but one can remain in that infinite consciousness and then still turn that into usable information. But it will still be only small aspects of it that will appear in words or in mathematical formulas or scientific theories or in magical procedures, but all of that will reach its purity in the great I am, which can miraculously change things, not through the morphogenetic field, but what we here call the morphogenic, which is the God field, you could say, that transcends the quantum unified field, and from which effects can happen that are transcendent of causality, because they don't come through the process of time, but they enter time from the timeless eternal presence. Hanuman.
Thank you, Shunya. I have a question about what you just mentioned regarding the sensor. Mm-hmm. And it seems that there's a real important step there of being able to deactivate that agency. Indeed. Because otherwise there's always a distortion of the information or not really fully being able to take it in. And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more about that that deactivation.
That's what this whole retreat is actually going to be about, starting with our next meetings. That's yoga. That's the whole process. And for some, it's very difficult to overcome the sensor and the conscious mind, because you see, the conscious mind itself is part of a dyad. You don't have a conscious ego mind without having a superego. And some people have very attacking, severe superegos. So their conscious mind can't even want to transcend the ego because they'll be called disloyal to your family if you do it. It will be crazy. People will think you're an idiot. You know, you'll go mad, right? So there's a constant inner voice telling you, don't do it, don't do it. So you have to recognize that the superego is a puppet of the puppeteer, which is the sensor. And by understanding the whole structure, you can get to the root of this antagonistic force that is keeping you small and guilty and shameful and in a state of confusion and internal conflict and all of that that is the normal state of the ego. But it has to be done from a meditative, expansive, silent capacity to introspect with neutrality upon the map of consciousness and of recognizing your ability to use the powers of consciousness to overcome the ego and ultimately to annihilate it. But you can't do that from within the ego. You have to have gotten to that level of soul consciousness to have the power and the authority to extinguish the ego operating system without going psychotic. So elevation of consciousness beyond the jurisdiction of the ego has to be achieved first. And that's why meditation is so important. And it will get you to soul consciousness from which you can deactivate HAL, the ego computer that's taken over the spaceship, and become free. But we'll talk much more about that tomorrow. How many people thought this was useful tonight? Did you get something out of it? Okay, good. I hope so, because we're going to go even deeper into this madness tomorrow. And so I hope that everyone is open to transcending all boundaries of thought and belief and of thought patterns that arise in the mind to try to resist, and all emotions, and to break free of all boundaries. So the more you're in that state of wanting to blast free into the unknown frontiers beyond the event horizon of ego consciousness, the more you want to know yourself at that level, the more you will activate that power of freedom that will break you out of the limited and defended and ignorant state of the ego consciousness into the fullness of spiritual power and of liberation and grace. And so I hope all of us are willing to feel the unbearable bliss of liberation from ego consciousness. Unbearable only to the ego. It's the bliss that dissolves it and returns you to the oneness with that consciousness that some call God, others call Buddha, others call Allah, others call Brahman, others call Shiva. But that one consciousness with many names is what you are. And you are that here and now and always, and it cannot be taken away, it cannot be blocked, if that is what you want, wholeheartedly and one-pointedly, you will break through and be free. So blessings to everyone. Namaste. Namaste.